The following program is a presentation of CRN Digital Talk Radio and Les Kincaid. And now it's time for Wines du Jour with your host, Chef Les Kincaid.
Thank you for joining us on Wines du Jour. We're broadcasting tonight from Don DeMarco's in Las Vegas, Nevada. My guests tonight are Vincent Rotolo and Michael Scuro. Say what I said? Scuro. I've only been doing this for 2 years. I've only known him for about 10 years, so what do I know? Anyway, we don't call him by his last name. That's why. So we look forward to this celebration of great food pairings and food and great wines this evening, and especially because Michael is the man in charge of J. Lohr Estate Wines, and we have three beautiful estate wines here for you to taste or to at least hear about. Thanks for all your inquiring emails from our home country, from your home country and from all around the world, from the East Coast, from the Left Coast, from Argentina, from Baja California, from Australia, just about anywhere. Welcome. Our in-house a special guest audience is both hungry and thirsty. They're getting a little bit of wine as we speak. And we're going to get this show on the road. Our program broadcasts each week, remembering each time that we reflect on what we're all about, and that is wine is food. A meal is a meal, but with a glass of wine, it's a celebration. From casual gatherings to formal affairs, wine celebrates any event. So if this is your first time listening to Wines du Jour, stay tuned. You need to know that we do not allow snobbery or intimidation in the room during the broadcast. Wines du Jour food and wine radio broadcast is distributed in all 50 states, all around the world via radio on CRN Digital Talk Radio Network, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher Radio, AHA Radio, and on several worldwide internet systems all around the globe. And we're also available on podcasts, and we're free on iTunes. And you can listen to us as well on Wonder Radio or Warp Radio. You're listening to Wines du Jour. I'm your host, Les Kincaid. So don't touch that radio dial or that TV remote. We're going to be back with fun information and great taste right here on Wines du Jour. But remember, a meal without breakfast... a meal without wine is called breakfast. I knew I could get that right. And that's an important thing to remember. But first, let's talk a little bit about something that I think is very interesting. J. Lohr is one of our favorite California wineries, and the man in charge of J. Lohr in this part of the country is Michael Scuro. And as I screwed up his name earlier, sorry about that, Michael.
No worries.
Okay. I want to talk to you about some of the things that are happening in the wine industry over the last 15 or 20 years, and that is something called a Stelvin closure. Now, a Stelvin closure to most people is simply called a screw cap, and that's what they think of it as. And initially, I believe, when they first came out with Stelvin closures, most of the wines that had the screw caps were mediocre wines at best. That's all changed in the last several years. In fact, there's been an awful lot of studies and tests made with screw caps or Stelvin closures and corks. And as you probably know, being a wine consumer, that there are different kinds of corks. You know, there's the pure cork, there's the cork that's all blended together, and so on and so forth. All of them are done for a different reason. And mostly, I have to say, is done because of dollars and cents. Now, you need to know that screw cap is not cheap compared to cork. They're about the same cost. So they're not using Stelvin closures just because it's cheaper in any way, shape, or form. And that's important to know. But they are using them because they've discovered that the testing that they've done, and they started out in Australia, and when we come back from the break we're about to go to, I'm going to talk with Michael a little bit about that test that they did in Australia with screw caps initially, and found that actually screw caps, the wine was in better shape after 10, 12, 15 years than it was with cork. That's incredible. So we'll talk more specific about that when we come back. We've got to go to a break. We'll be back coast to coast and around the world on the internet when we return right here on Wines du Jour at Dom DeMarco's in Las Vegas, Nevada. See you in a few moments. Perfect. Thank you. Welcome back to Wines du Jour. We're having a good time here at Dom DeMarco's. And let me tell you, this is a really neat place. We're sitting actually on their patio today. And as you might know, Las Vegas has had a heat storm a little bit early. You know, we get pretty hot here in the summertime, and that's okay. But about 3 or 4 weeks early, we started getting pretty warm. And today, I believe, was somewhere around 110. And you think, holy cow, 110, that'd kill me. Well, if you live in South Dakota, that would probably just about kill you at 110. But as we like to say in Las Vegas, it's dry heat. That's a semi-joke. But the fact is, with the dry heat, and that is a fact, we don't have that humidity running around, which makes you sweat even if you're in the shade. In Las Vegas, at 110, if you're not out directly in the sun, it's not that terrible. In fact, we're sitting on the patio. There is a breeze of about 8 or 10 miles an hour, which keeps it cool, and this turns out to be really beautiful. I think a very pleasant evening and a great way to enjoy a little bit of wine and discover a restaurant that maybe you didn't know very much about until now, and that would be Dom DeMarco's. I mentioned before we went to a break that we're going to talk a little bit about screw caps or Stelvin closures, but before we do that, I want to mention something that I think is important, and that is our first wine. They just poured it for everybody here as our guest audience, and that is the J. Lohr's Bay Mist White Riesling. And I would mention one thing, and then I'm going to ask Michael if he'd tell us a little bit about this. White Riesling is actually the name of the grape, okay? Riesling is the name of the grape. And the Bay Mist, we'll find out what that means, because J. Lohr doesn't put names out just for the heck of it. There's a reason. So, Michael, tell us a little bit about your 2015 estate. I need to tell you, it is all the wines this evening are estate wines. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But the Bay Mist White Riesling. Michael?
Okay. Well, I'd like to mention, I think it's kind of ironic that you mentioned the South Dakota.
Yeah.
Because that's where Jerry Lohr is from. He grew up as a farmer in South Dakota.
No kidding.
So I just want to throw it out there a little. It's kind of ironic you mentioned that with the heat.
That's great.
So our J. Lohr Estates Bay Mist White Riesling, the name Bay Mist actually just comes from in Monterey Bay. The depth of the bay there in the ocean is just about 12,000 feet deep, just a little below that. And that bay creates a lot of fog and mist off the cold water. And rolls down into the vineyards in the Arroyo Seco in Monterey. And the name Bay Mist just refers to the bay in Monterey Bay.
And, of course, all the juice in this bottle is 100% white Riesling. You need to know that. It's not a blend of any kind. The price is about $9 to $12, depending on what part of the country you live in. Here in Las Vegas, I have to say it's probably in the $9 category. And, boy, this is the time of the year if you're going to drink a nice, rather sweet wine that isn't overbearing by any stretch of the imagination. This, along with the other two wines that we're going to have a little bit later in the program, are all three perfect for summertime. So keep that in mind, guys, you that are here doing that. So let's get back to the Stelvin closures. Tell us a little bit about what you know, and then I'll throw my two cents worth in, too, if you don't mind, about the Stelvin closure and the original test down in Australia.
Sure. The one I told you about in Australia was a 10-year study in Australia, and they used a grape variety called Simeon, which is a white grape variety.
Uh-huh.
And it was a 10-year study, and they open up every year a bottle that was corked and that one that was Stelvin closure. Screw cap that everyone knows. The technical name is Stelvin enclosure. And actually, after 10 years, the bottle that was the Stelvin enclosure held up better than the wine that was a cork enclosure. So just to give you a little history of the studies.
I think that's good to know. And so far, and I've checked as many places as I possibly can, and every time I talk to a new winery and their winemaker, I ask them about Stelvin closures and how they feel and what they're doing and so on. And I just have to say, it's not going to be too long until Stelvin closure is a common, ordinary thing with all wineries. You know, there's a few small wineries that do, let's call them boutique wines and so on. They still feel compelled to put corks in their bottle, and that's okay. I don't have anything wrong with that. But the fact that they're starting to come up with the Stelvin closure is really a good thing. Don't you agree with that?
I do, and the reason why we're talking about that tonight is because three of the wines that we're featuring from our state's J. Lohr are Stelvin enclosure. The Riesling, and the next one is our Flume Crossing Sauvignon Blanc, and last will be our Valdigi. They all are three Stelvin Enclosure wines.
Yeah, and I think people are going to discover a wine tonight that they didn't even know existed. I'm talking about a particular name for a wine. Well, we'll get to that a little bit later. But I want to mention something else about Stelvin Enclosures, and that is the reason they call them Stelvin Enclosures is simple. Today, and this could change in the near future, but today there's only one company in the whole world that makes the equipment that puts screw caps on bottles, and it's the name of the company is Stelvin. So there you go, Stelvin Enclosures. And so no matter if you're in France or you're in Australia or California and you want to use screw caps, you've got to buy the Stelvin product in order to do that. So they call it Stelvin Enclosures. They've kind of got a pretty good thing going for them. Although I have to tell you that there are some changes being made. There's other competition coming in and so on. And I don't know that that's going to get the cost of the Stelvin Enclosure down at all, but if it does, that'll be great. On the other hand, if it doesn't, it's not going to make much difference, because the difference between the cork and the Stelvin Enclosure is about the same cost. So it isn't going to affect you and I too much when we go to our local wine store to buy it. So that's interesting. Number two, the wine itself. Boy, I'll tell you, this is $9 to $12 a bottle is an awful reasonably good price for a heck of a nice wine. And I need to tell you that I talk about this every week, and that is the amount of the highest percentage of alcohol in the bottle. And with this, it's 12%. 12% is below good. Good is around 13 to 14%. Too high is above 14, 14.5, 15, 15.5, 16%. And the reason I'm saying that is too high, I happen to say it because being a chef, I worry about pairing food and wine. And the higher the alcohol percentage, the less it pairs with good food. So it just cuts down what it will pair with, the higher the alcohol. So it's better for everybody, I think, to have the wine around the 12, 13, 14, 14.5% without a problem. And all three of the wines this evening are well within that limit.
Actually, yes, they are. The Riesling's actually a little over 13% alcohol.
But 13 is okay, but I'm saying 14.5 yes, right. is up to that. It's pretty
yes,
good.
Yes, absolutely. But just a little about our Riesling, our J. Lohr States Riesling. On your flavor profile, you get aromas of pear and nectarine, apricot, great minerality at the end, even hints.
Nice acidity. I like the acidity in this. And I love the color. Would you call this straw color?
Yes.
I think that's what it is. What we like to do, just for your own information, is when you have your first glass of wine for the day, whether you're at a restaurant or a friend's house or at home, the first thing you should do, this is my suggestion, is to swirl the wine around in your glass for about 10 seconds. And then before you do anything else, kind of raise it up to the light and look through to see the reflection that comes through that wine. Now, we're not looking for beasties or sawdust or any of that sort of thing. That's not why we're doing this. What we're looking for is a reflection of light. And if you do this every day or every time you have a glass of wine, you will find that you can tell before you even taste it what it's going to be like based on the type of reflection, that light that comes through that wine. I know right now it sounds Greek, but it's not. And you'll find the more you try it, the more you can understand it. And then in addition to that, I think the straw color is very nice for 100% white Riesling. I think it's good. The price is right, and so on. It has good acidity, which I think white wine, especially when you're going to pair it with food, should have some acidity, 99% of everything that you're going to pair it with.
Absolutely. You know, acidity is a big part of wine. You can't have a great wine without great acidity.
Right. And then also, the chef here at Dom DeMarco's has come up with his first pairing, which is a series of beans and some cheese and some roasted pepper on a cannellini. Cannellini is a slice of generally Italian bread, could be French bread. They take it after they slice it, put it in the oven for 10, 12, 15 minutes, take it out, and then they put the topping on it, whatever it might be. In this case, it's what they call Tuscan style beans with pepperoni, a little bit of basil, red onion, roasted peppers, a little garlic. I think it's a good combination. And then when you take a little taste of that and then have a little sip of this white Riesling, you're going to say, hey, this pairs very well together. So what we're saying in essence is not only are crostinis good, and we'll talk a little bit more about crostinis later on, but also summer wine, because it is, even though not officially, I guess, for a few days, summertime, it's time to go buy your stash, so to speak, so you don't run out when the door gets knocked on and guests show up that you didn't expect. If you have a couple bottles of this white Riesling available that you can chill in no time flat, you're in good shape.
I would definitely say we have already hit our summer here. When it hits 110, you can officially say it.
Yeah, in Las Vegas, it's summer, but in other places, it might not be. I know, unfortunately, there's some places that are underwater. I mean, the flooding in certain parts of the country is just historic, number one, which is not anything to brag about, but historic, and has really caused a lot of dollars and cents damage, as well as a lot of misery for an awful lot of people. And that's why every day we say there isn't a better town to live in than Las Vegas. And one of the other reasons about living in Las Vegas that I think is important is the fact that we have more tourism here probably than anywhere in the country. We have over 44 million people fly in and out of Las Vegas per year. Now, that's a heck of a lot of people. And what that means is every one of them have to have a place to stay. What that means for the hotels is they're going to have a lot of competition because there's a number of hotels, but the fact is they can rent the rooms. And one of the things I talk about quite often, and not because I favor them in any way, shape, or form, is the MGM Grand, without a doubt the largest ownership, if you will, of hotels in town. But that particular hotel itself has 5,032 rooms that they have to rent each and every night. Now, can you imagine the job trying to rent 5,032 rooms every day? And then your next-door neighbor and the people across the street and so on that have rooms, the prices that they're going to charge, you have to be competitive with, because if you're a higher price, nobody, you know. So you got 5,032 rooms at a reasonable price. Guess what? You and I make out like a champ. You come to Las Vegas, whether you're going to stay at the MGM Grand or not, you're going to stay at a nice hotel, because everyone we have in town are pretty doggone nice. But the most important part from my standpoint isn't sleeping. The most important part is the food and beverage, and, of course, we're known for the entertainment. We have better entertainment in Las Vegas, have had for since the 50s at least, and will continue to have better entertainment than anywhere else in America. No question about it. You can see almost any kind of a show you want, whether it's a star or whether it's a group or whether it's a band or some type of a specialty going on. They're everywhere, so you don't have a problem for entertainment in town. But most importantly, in my particular situation, being a chef, is food and beverage. And I have to tell you, New York used to be number one in America for the food. Ain't no more. Las Vegas picked it up about 8 or 10 years ago, and they're considered to be number one. And what that means for you and I is the food here, even though it's competitive in price, is absolutely outstanding. We have an awful lot of celebrity chefs that started out in New York, got a reputation, but then they moved to Las Vegas to get out of the snow and the sleet and the rain and all the things that we don't get here. Well, we do get rain, but let me tell you, it's about 4.5 inches a year. That ain't too much when you're talking about 45 and 50 inches back east. Okay, got to go. Got to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk specifically about what estate wine is all about, and the fact that my favorite winery in California, J. Lohr, is all estate wines for all three of these tonight. So we'll be back right after these messages. Concrete. Welcome back to Wine du Jour. Boy, we're having a good time here. This Crostini is absolutely excellent, isn't it? Don't you wish it was about twice as large? And it's a large one to start with, so that's a pretty good thing. Well, I want to talk a little bit about estate wines. I mentioned earlier that all three of the wines we're having this evening are J. Lohr estate wines. And just so that you know, there's a law. It's not just federal. It's pretty much international law that says if you want to put the word estate on your label, on your bottle of wine, you must own the property where the grapes came from, or you must have a long-term contract for leasing to buy the grapes from that vineyard. That's the only exception. But most everybody owns their own that call it estate, and J. Lohr is no exception. J. Lohr is really in the forefront when it comes to producing excellent wines. I don't know that he's ever put out one that isn't above average. And the good thing is he does enough of it, and he's been in the business long enough. He owns everything that he gets out of the vineyard. He owns the vineyard and so on. He doesn't have any monthly payments to make, so he doesn't gouge you when it comes to prices. So the price is, you know, $9.99 for a bottle of this white Riesling is pretty damn good. And if you had a competitor down the road, they probably get $12, $15, $18 for that same bottle of wine. So, and it may not even be as tasty, huh?
Yes, being family owned and operated still since 1972. J stands for Jerry Lohr, started making wine in 1972, and being still family-owned and operated, that's why our pricing is still at a phenomenal price.
Right, absolutely. Value. Well, because it is a Bay Mist, tell us again what Bay Mist means that's on the label. It says Bay Mist White Riesling.
It just refers to the Monterey Bay, that's all.
It's the Monterey Bay.
Monterey
well,
Bay,
for those of you that...
off the bay.
But for those of you that may not know, the Monterey Bay is in the northern part of what we call Central Coast. Central Coast is the whole coastline in California from about San Jose all the way down to through Santa Barbara. So somewhere in there, and of course we're talking about Monterey, it's at the very northern part of the Central Coast area, is an area called Monterey. And Monterey County is a place that has outstanding terroir, if you will. That would be the type of condition of the soil, the wind, the rain, and so on, for a couple of different grapes. And White Riesling is one of them. Chardonnay is another one. Pinot Noir is another one. So if you look in your wine store for wine, say a Pinot Noir as an example, and you're not familiar with the labels by the brand, but you see that they come from the Monterey area, there's a very good chance it's going to be a very good Pinot Noir. The same thing with Chardonnay, the same thing with Riesling, correct?
Riesling and our Sauvignon Blanc that we're going to have next, but our Riesling, I did want to mention, it is medium sweet, so you could have a whole bottle and don't feel like you drank a bunch of sugar.
Yeah, exactly. And plus it's 12% alcohol content, so that's not high in anybody's book. So I think that's a win-win situation. Okay, let's jump over now to number two wine. They'll be pouring it as we speak, and we're talking about J. Lohr Estate Flume Crossing. That's the name of the crossing. We'll get Michael to tell us a little bit about that. But it's Sauvignon Blanc, and that's the name of the grape. Sauvignon Blanc, for those of you that don't know, is, first of all, a white grape, and it is my personal favorite to pair with food. If you're looking for a white wine to pair with food, my thinking is jump on Sauvignon Blanc to start with. Chances are you'll find exactly what you like, but there are others that work, of course.
Absolutely. Our art, J. Lohr Estate's Flume Crossing Sauvignon Blanc. The name Flume Crossing is just refers to the winds that cross the Royal Seco River into the vineyards, and that's all the reference is, Flume Crossing.
Uh-huh.
Crossing of the winds into the vineyards. Actually, this is our 2015 J. Lohr Flume Crossing Sauvignon Blanc, one of our other estate wines from Royal Seco in Monterey. And I feel that it's a beautiful Sauvignon Blanc that's very unique because most Sauvignon Blancs are only aged in stainless steel, and 30% of our Sauvignon Blanc, our winemaker was really, really brilliant to do this and age 30% of it in new acacia wood. It's French oak, new French oak, for just a few months.
Well, that's a big bonus. That's a big bonus for you and I.
Absolutely, because what it does for the Sauvignon Blanc, it actually adds a little cream texture at the end on your palate and softens the acidity a little that sometimes Sauvignon Blancs will have.
Well, you mentioned tangerine a little bit earlier with the Riesling. This has got tangerine, passion fruit. It's very crisp, which is what I really like about Sauvignon Blanc in particular. Almost all Sauvignon Blancs are fairly crisp and have nice acidity. It's kind of lively, if you will. And to me, that just complements food, and that's what that's all about. Now, I'm going to tell you that the food is unbelievable that they're going to be bringing out next. You're going to have a salad on toast. That's not, that doesn't make sense right now, but when it comes out, you're going to really like it. In fact, here it comes as we speak. When we come back from the break, I'll give you all the details about this Olive Crostini. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back right after these messages. Welcome back to Wine Sojour. We're having a good time here at Dom DeMarco's. Listen, when we went through the break, I mentioned that we're going to have an olive salad. Well, basically, it is a salad, although there's no lettuce involved in it. It's a combination of things. They've got some black olives, some green olives, some artichoke chopped up real fine, some caramelized onion. Now, maybe I should stop there and say, you heard me say caramelized. This is not caramelized. There is no such thing as caramelized. Caramel is a piece of candy. Caramel is everything else. So it's caramelized onion. I'm not telling you how to talk. I'm just telling you what the rules are, and you do whatever you want to do. But in addition to that, they have a little baby arugula that's chopped up in this. And they put it on a nice crostini. And let me tell you, it is so good with this Sauvignon Blanc. Now, what else can you do with Sauvignon Blanc? Well, first of all, I think this particular Sauvignon Blanc is very well balanced. I like all the different parts of it. It's crisp. It's got that straw-like color similar to the white Riesling. It's got some mango, some green pepper. And green pepper, as you probably know, that's another word for bell pepper. Green bell pepper. We probably all grew up eating green bell peppers until we got to be a little more knowledgeable about food. And now we don't buy green bell peppers. We buy yellow or orange or something that has some great flavor. Because green bell peppers are really kind of bitter. They're not mature, I guess is the right way to put it. So we leave those in the store for the produce manager's wife to fix for the produce manager. And we take the white or the yellow or the green or the black. You probably didn't know there's five different colors of bell peppers, one of which is green, of course. But the others are black and white yellow. And orange comes from Holland, in case you didn't know that. So I just thought I'd throw that in. And in addition to that, they also have some baby arugula, which I mentioned. I happen to love baby arugula for salads, but they take a little bit of it and chop it up and then mix it into this olive mixture, and it just puts a little extra taste and flavor to it. So that, along with the Sauvignon Blanc, I think pairs very, very well. And Sauvignon Blanc from $12 to $14, you can't hardly beat it.
You know, it's such a great value. The wine is incredible.
Uh-huh. I agree. What kind of temperature and how would we get to that temperature should we try our Sauvignon Blanc?
Oh, well, it's a white wine, so it's, you know, 55 degrees, 45 to 50.
Uh-huh. Okay, 45 served. To 50. So that's a little bit on the cooler side typically for white wine. Is that?
Well, you know, I say that because here we're so hot, and if you go outside
true.
On your outside
10 minutes
your patio,
later, it's 60.
Yeah. Right? So.
Yeah, I understand. Okay, well, the reason I ask is that people don't realize what to do with wine. They bring it home from the store, and they know it's supposed to be, let's say, 55 degrees in temperature. How do you get it to 55? Your thermostat is set at 75. So how do you get that down to 55? So what do? The answer is they stick it in the refrigerator. Well, the refrigerator, in case you didn't know, and you probably don't, nothing personal, but your refrigerator temperature is about 39 degrees. It can't be over 40 degrees because your milk would sour, your butter would be bad, and so on. So our government, in its infinite wisdom, suggests everybody's refrigerator be at 40 degrees. And if you have an actual thermostat, I suggest you set it at 39 and not 40. It's too risky because you don't realize, but every time you open that refrigerator, the inside of the refrigerator, the temperature rises. So you're going to, you know, if you get in there a lot, you're going to be at 43, 45, and that's just not healthy for the items that are in your refrigerator, including your eggs. So the point I'm getting at is that if you set it at 39, everything works out well. You don't lose milk, you don't lose butter and the other foods and so on. But when you take it out of the refrigerator, your wine now is 39 degrees and you want it to be 55. So what do? Well, here we are in Las Vegas. My suggestion is you open it, pour it in a glass, give it about 10 minutes. It will be probably 40 to 50 degrees without a problem. You agree with that?
Absolutely. And if it's a red, throw it in the fridge for 30 to 40 minutes. Because red wine should be slightly chilled, served at 60 to 62 degrees. And our red that we're serving tonight, our Valdegui, actually should be served slightly chilled. And we'll talk about that when we get there.
Right, yeah, that's a good thing. Okay, so what I'm getting at in essence is the fact that the Sauvignon Blanc from Flume Crossing, that's an actual area in the Monterey area, I want to mention. It's crisp. It's got the tangerine and passion fruit that I mentioned before, the little bit, green pepper. But more importantly to me, for a Sauvignon Blanc, it's very well balanced. It's got a nice acidity to it. It has what I call a long lingering finish, which simply means that once you swallow it, you continue tasting it for a few seconds after that, which is not what normally happens with it. So, more power to you. And the retail price is $12 to $14 a bottle. And for Sauvignon Blanc, that's a very reasonable price. Jerry Lohr, another winner as far as I'm concerned. I don't know if I mentioned this earlier or not, but the alcohol content on this Sauvignon Blanc is 13.5. Perfect. Just exactly perfect to go with food. So that's a good thing. Well, we're going to have to go to a break here in just a couple moments, but more importantly, I want to talk to you just real quick-like about the J. Lohr Estates Wildflower Valdegui. What in the hell is a Valdegui? And I'm going to, because I know he knows all about it, I'm going to ask Michael to tell us a little bit about it, and then I'll throw my 2 cents worth in before we go to a break. What is Valdegui?
Valdegui is actually a grape variety that is originates from southwest France. In matter of fact, in California, they first thought the grape was Gamay, which is from the Beaujolais region of France in Burgundy. And they discovered after doing a DNA test that it's not Gamay, it's Valdegui. And that grape variety originates from southwest France.
So now, you thought that all white wines were Sauvignon Blanc, Chardonnay, etc. Now you know there's a new one that most people don't have a clue of called Valdegui. 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 Okay? I'm sorry. Got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little more about Valdegui, but more importantly about how it tastes and what kind of stuff goes with it, including what the chef put together. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back coast to coast and around the world on the internet right after these messages. To Wines du Jour. We're having a great time here. This is our third wine. They're pouring it as we speak. I want to thank Michael for taking the time to do that for us. But he's pouring this, the J. Lohr Estate Wildflower Valdegui. Valdegui is, in case you didn't know it, is the name of a varietal that you probably didn't know anything about. And you should try to search it out in the retail store and find that there's some very nice Valdegui around. But most importantly, the one from J. Lohr, I think, is good. And one of the main reasons, other than it tastes damn good, looks wonderful, that beautiful purple-red color. It's very, very unique in its color. But it's also $8 to $9 a bottle. Now, if you talk about a perfect summer wine, that's not going to break the bank. We're talking about Valdegui from J. Lohr Estates for $8 to $9, depending on what part of the country you're in. That's just, to me, phenomenal. But listen now what the chef has done. He put together some really nice crostini to go with it. And I shouldn't say that because it's not a crostini. It's a bruschetta. In fact, I want to tell you the difference because there is a difference. And they're both Italian. One is called a bruschetta, and one is called a crostini. Now, here's what the difference is. They both have the same bread. It's both sliced exactly the same way. One is put in the oven for 10 or 15, 12 minutes, whatever the case may be, and the other one is put on the grill instead. The bruschetta comes from the grill. The crostini comes from the oven. Make sense? Now you know more than most Italians, because I have to tell you, most Italians have no clue. They mix them up all the time, and I'm not saying that's bad. I just want you to know the difference. That's all there is to it. But the tomato, and we're talking about, you know, talk about tomatoes in Las Vegas is kind of a joke. Not just other places, but in Las Vegas for tomatoes, it's like non-existent. The tomatoes here are horrible. I have to tell you that right off the bat. When I say horrible, I'm talking about the quality of the tomato and the price per pound that you pay for them is ludicrous. And let me tell you why. I come from the San Joaquin Valley in California. I spent about 20 years there. That's the Fresno area, for those of you that know a little bit about California. And in that, in the southwest part from Fresno proper, is an area that they grow tomatoes. And I know two of the people. One has a section of land that he grows tomatoes on, and that's 620 acres. And the other one has two sections of land, and he grows tomatoes. That's 620 acres twice. That's a hell of a lot of tomatoes. And I know him well enough that I can speak with some authority, if you will. Not one of those tomatoes are ever pulled off the vine that are red. They're always pulled off the vine when they're yellow or green, depending on what variety that they're doing. And the reason I'm saying that is you and I grew up buying red tomatoes in the grocery store, in the produce section, or from your local farmer. If you're fortunate enough to have a local farmer, then you know what good tomatoes taste like. If you don't know about that, then you're doing what I'm talking about and buying something that looks good because it's red, but has no flavor because it was pulled off the vine way before it was ripe. And that's unfortunately what we get to buy here, and we pay top dollar for it. And that's just a crime, in my opinion. So I wish there was a way to get the produce manager to find out about it and do something, but that doesn't seem to happen. Anyway, the point I'm getting at is when you take bruschetta and some great tomatoes that have a flavor, and put the two together, you've got yourself a pretty nice, tasty thing. And that's going to go very well with the wildflower Valdigi. And I'm going to ask Michael, if he would, tell us a little bit about Valdigi and what kind of flavor and taste that we would probably find with the average bottle.
So the grape variety Valdigi, like I said, is indigenous to southwest France and actually goes great in our vineyards in Monterey, the Monterey AVA, which is in Monterey County, and it is 100% Valdigi, and Valdigi is a red grape variety, but it's a really fruity red grape variety. That's why they first thought it was a Gamay grape variety, but it's a large berried variety, actually, and the flavors that you get on your palate, it's a touch of pomegranate and cranberry, hints of black pepper, you know, it's a little, like really fruit forward, people say it's like juicy with the slight sweetness to it on your palate. But actually, this wine, I chose this wine and all these wines tonight because, it is summertime, and these all are great summer wines,
Exactly. Especially
the Valdigi, because it should be drunk slightly chilled, and this wine would go great out on the patio, sitting by the pool, out in a barbecue, wonderful with the spicy Asian food as well.
You know, this Valdigi is one of my favorite red varietals that a lot of people aren't aware of. And let me just tell you a couple things that I like to serve with Valdigi as opposed to Merlot or Cabernet or Pinot, okay? Salmon. Valdigi and salmon, if you grill it or bake it or broil it or boil it, is just outstanding with Valdigi. That's the way I see it. And if you're looking for something to serve that's a little different, not Pinot Noir for Thanksgiving turkey, Valdigi is a great concept because even people that don't like red wine, so to speak, you know, they're white wine drinkers, you know, we've all got friends that feel that way. You give them a taste of this, they'll say, wow, I like this. This is pretty good. And it makes turkey taste pretty doggone good. And if you're like me, and I love to do what I'm about to say, and that is a charcuterie plate. Charcuterie. Oh. Cheese and meats, you know, all sliced sausages and so on and so forth. And if you'll open a bottle of this, you'll be looking for another plate and another bottle in no time flat. That's just the way that works.
Absolutely. It's very refreshing, light and refreshing. Goes great with the meat items that you mentioned. But I like to reiterate that it actually goes great with spicy food as well because it is fruit forward.
Yeah. Well, we got to go to a break. Also goes good with barbecue. We'll be back right after these messages. Welcome back to Wines du Jour. Dom DeMarco's is where we're sitting on their patio. And believe it or not, right now it's probably cooled down to about 102. Almost freezing in here. But the patio has a nice little breeze to it. We've got a nice covering over it. And let me tell you, the wine and the food here are very, very good. So if you haven't been to a Dom DeMarco's, whether it's back in New York or whether it's out here in Las Vegas, you need to try it. Their products are very good. And yes, a lot of people think of Dom DeMarco's as a pizza place. Well, they do outstanding pizzas. There's no question about it. But they have wonderful menu with all kinds of things on it. So if you're a vegetarian, you don't have to order a vegetarian pizza. You can order items off the menu. If you're not, whether you like food or fish or whatever the case may be, they can take care of you without a problem. One of the things I liked about this particular Valdigi is the beautiful color. It is red and purple, which is kind of unusual for red wine, but it's kind of a combination of red and purple, and it's just beautiful. And if you did what I suggested, is to take a look at it for the reflection, you'll see that there's a lot of light reflection in this particular wine. And as mentioned by Michael, it has a lot of cherry and black pepper and so on. But I mentioned that I like charcuterie plates. And one of my favorite wines to serve with charcuterie is this Valdigri. But I want to also mention that something that I think is pretty important is one of my favorite items to serve with Valdigri that I make at home, and I hope you do too, and that is a duck confit. I know. What the hell is that? Okay. But it's really, you get duck legs, and you can buy them at a lot of stores, buy duck legs, and slow cook them in duck fat. I know that sounds a little crazy. It's not unhealthy, but it is so good. When I say slow cook them, we're talking about 3 or 4 or 5 hours in a low temperature with these. And when you take the leg out, you end up with the bone in your hand and the meat still in. You know, I mean, it just falls off the bone, but the taste is outstanding. And then if you can make any kind of a salad, arugula I mentioned a little bit earlier, make a little arugula salad and put some of this confit duck along in that salad, you will be a happy camper, I have to tell you. And I also mentioned just before we went to a break, Valdigri goes, you don't have to have Zinfandel or you don't have to have Cabernet Sauvignon with barbecue. You can try this. It's absolutely a little unique, I agree, but absolutely wonderful with barbecue.
Absolutely. It goes great with barbecue.
Also, this goes well with fruit. You know, this is the time of the year when we've got fresh vegetables and a lot of new fruits coming on the market, if you will. Squash for vegetables is one. I mean, there's a whole lot of things, including cauliflower and so on. This is the time of year to serve that at home. And if you have a grill, think about grilling your vegetables as opposed to parboiling them or put them in the oven and bake them. Put them on your grill and grill them for a minute or two on each side. You'll be amazed at how great they taste and very, very healthy for you at the very same time. So that's important. So I mentioned turkey for Thanksgiving. I hope you aren't one of those that worry about having turkey once a year. Turkey is a good product. You should have it more often than that. Consider buying maybe a turkey breast in the store, cooking it up, and serving it, whether it's Thanksgiving or not. It's really a good item to have. It's healthy, it's tasty, and it goes very well. Got to go to a break. Oh, we got to go home, I guess. That's not a bad thing. So I just wanted to mention to you that I want to thank you for listening to Wines is Your Food and Wine program, coming to you from, Stainless Steel. Forgot to mention that for Valdigri. We're America's number one syndicated food and wine radio show. And if you've enjoyed tonight's program, tell everybody you know. I want to thank Vincent Rotolo, who wasn't able to come out because he's swamped inside. And, of course, we're talking about Michael Scuro from J-Lore. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back next week at this very same time from a very nice restaurant that you probably don't know about. Maybe you do, called Bravo. We'll be back next week. So see you later. Thanks for listening. Good night, everybody.